training purposes. Hank opened the door. Pay up or get out, Mr. Yao said, jabbing his finger at Hank. It's as simple as that.
Check your facts, Yao, Hank said. I've been staying here for 6 months. That makes me a resident. You can't just kick out a resident like that, he finished, with a snap of his fingers.
Mr. Yao shook his head.
That can't be right. You've been here for 6 months?
He turned to my parents.
It's true, my parents said.
How did we ever let this street rat weasel his way in here? Mr. Yao fumed.
Well, this has been lovely, Hank said, closing the door in Mr. Yao's face. Mr. Yao pounded on the door, shouting,
You're a loser! And, This isn't over!
When Hank refused to open up, Mr. Yao turned to my parents.
You two, in my office, now!
My parents exchanged worried looks as they followed him back to the front office. For the next 15 minutes, I listened to Mr. Yao yammer on and on at my parents from my room. He said that if Hank did not pay up, we would have to pay for Hank. He was going to take the rent straight out of our salary. Anger brewed inside me, scalding hot. Chapter 31. At school, Jason continued making fun of my clothes. Even the sixth graders were in on it now. At first, I managed to convince myself that it was kind of flattering that they were even talking about me, but then I heard what they said. In the bathroom, a couple of sixth grade girls were gossiping.
Her pants! Oh my God, have you seen her pants?
They asked each other while I sat in the stall.
It's like she buys her clothes by the pound.
My grandmother dresses better than her.
I sat on the toilet waiting for them to leave, my heart clenching like a fist. Dear Mean Girls, you're right. I buy my clothes by the pound. My mom and I go over to the Goodwill and we buy secondhand clothes. Clothes you probably threw away. I'm probably wearing your socks right now. Let me tell you what it's like to buy secondhand clothes. First, my mom washes it a million times. She scrubs it with her hands and then puts it in the washer and then scrubs it again. Still, when I first put it on, I wriggle and squirm, thinking of all the girls who've been inside the pants before. I used to hope it was girls like you, girls who live in big houses, girls who go on vacation in the summer. I used to think that maybe if I was wearing the same pants, I kind of went on vacation too, and that used to make me happy. Now do you know what I think? I think I'd rather never go on vacation than be like you. Mia Tang. P.S. Floral cotton pants are way more comfy than jeans. It was so satisfying writing the letter that, for a full second, I actually thought about putting it into my backpack and giving it to the girls at school. But I didn't. School dragged on. The popular girls continued mocking me. Mr. Yao called up twice a day to scream at us. The only thing that made me feel a tiny bit better was that somebody left $5 in the tip jar after their stay. One afternoon, while I was sitting at the front desk, a beat-up old Chevrolet slowed by the motel. It inched toward us, the driver craning his neck as he peered in. I squinted inside the car and saw a Chinese man. I figured he must be a friend of Aunt Ling's, looking for the blue baseball cap, so I immediately waved at him to come in. Mr. Yao wasn't there. The coast was clear. Uncle Zhu was a big man, about 6'2".
200 pounds of northern Chinese, he said proudly in his thick Harbin accent.
My dad pointed at his compact car.
And you've been sleeping in that thing?
Uncle Zhu had explained that he hadn't had a place to sleep for a little while.
It's been a hard couple of weeks, he said, stretching as he said the words.
Well, let's get you a proper shower and a meal, my dad said, leading him toward room 3.
At dinner, Uncle Zhu told us he had been working as a janitor in a hospice.
What's a hospice? I asked.
He thought for a minute about how to put it. It's basically a waiting room.
You mean like at the airport? I asked.
The day I left China, Shen had pointed to the waiting room in the arrival section right before I got on the plane.
I'll see you right there in a couple of years, okay? He had said.
I nodded. Tears stung the back of my eyes.
The time will flash by like whoom, he'd said. Then he looked down at the floor and whispered, "And when you come back, you'll be all American."
"No, I won't," I insisted.
"Will too."
"Nothing's going to change, Shen."
"Yes, it will," he said. "You're going to come back wearing all kinds of fancy clothes."
Oh, Shen, if you only knew.
I looked up from my floral pants to Uncle Zhu.
"So is that what it is? A waiting room for arrivals?" I asked.
He glanced at my parents as if to get their permission. They nodded at him. "It's a waiting room for people who are about to pass away," he finally said.
"Oh."
Ever so quietly, my mother picked up the last of the beef with her chopsticks and set it down onto Uncle Drew's plate. Uncle Drew set off for San Diego the next morning. When I heard San Diego, I dashed to the front office and jotted down another one of the addresses. Uncle Drew promised he'd drive by and call me if he saw the Thunderbird. As my dad and I waved to Uncle Drew, suddenly I had an idea. I turned to my dad.
"What if we hide Hank like the immigrants?" I asked him. "Then Mr. Yao would stop screaming at us. He would never know."
My dad shook his head and said that it was way too risky. The immigrants only stayed for one night, whereas Hank lived here. We were bound to get caught. I decided to drop it. A week later, my parents received their paycheck from Mr. Yao. $140 was missing. True to his word, Mr. Yao was making us pay for Hank, $20 per day. My parents got into a big fight about what to do. My mother said we should quit, but my dad wouldn't hear of it.
"Quit?" my dad said. "And do what? You think it's any better out there? You heard the stories from all the immigrants?"
My mother didn't respond, but instead went into the kitchen and pulled out stinky tofu paste from the back of the cupboard. Stinky tofu paste was this disgusting concoction you could buy at the Chinese supermarket, which she ate whenever she'd been through a lot. And even though I didn't like the smell of the tofu, I still liked it more than hearing my parents fighting. As my mom munched away on her paste, my dad and I sat outside by the curb, waiting for the smell to clear. The early evening wind sighed between us. I wanted to tell him it was going to be okay, that I had a plan to save us. All I needed was $300, and I even had a plan for that too. So far, I had made $30 in tips. But I didn't end up telling him. I was worried if he knew about the $30, he might take it away. And then I wouldn't be able to save us. Chapter 32. In school the next day, Mrs. Douglas clapped her hands together and announced we were having a math challenge.
"No, no, we're not ready," we insisted.
But Mrs. Douglas wouldn't hear any of it. She split us into teams of four. We were to work together to solve one extra tough math question, and the first team with the right answer was the winner. Jason, thankfully, was not on my team, but Bethany, Joanne, and Paula were, and they were three of the most popular girls in our year. I braced for more jokes about my pants. To my surprise, when they heard I was on their team, they cheered.
"Yes, we got the Chinese girl!"
I took a seat next to my new teammates and smiled. I gazed up at the board, pencil ready, determined not to let my team down. I couldn't believe my eyes when Mrs. Douglas finished writing the problem on the board. It was a problem about a motel. The daily rate for a room at a motel is $30 a day. A customer at a motel wants to rent the room for just 2 hours. How much does the motel charge the customer? I glanced at Jason, who looked similarly stoked. I clutched my pencil tighter. No way was I letting him win this.
$30,
I said to my teammates immediately. Just because someone leaves early, you don't give him a discount. Bethany tossed her blonde hair over her shoulder and looked hesitantly at me.
Are you sure?
She asked.
Shouldn't it be cheaper?
I shook my head. Trust me, I wanted to say. I've been doing this a long time.
It's $30,
I repeated. I'm positive. My group went with my answer, raising their hands to tell Mrs. Douglas. But as soon as we told Mrs. Douglas our answer, she shook her head and said it was wrong.
That is not the correct answer, she said.
Angry eyes turned to me.
You said it was $30, my teammates yelled at me.
I'm sorry, I muttered.
You're Chinese. You're supposed to be good at math.
She's not Chinese, Joanne said. Her eyes dropped to my pants. She's ugly knees.
The words sliced into me. By the time we went back and started calculating 2 divided by 24 times $30, Jason's group already blurted out the correct answer, $2.50. We had lost the math challenge.
Bravo,
Mrs. Douglas said, handing Jason's team cherry lollipops as she clapped her hands again and asked us to return to our original seats. Jason sat next to me, sucking loudly on his lollipop, boasting his victory with every lick.
Guess it's official, he said. I'm better than you at math.
I wanted to remind him that I was there when his dad screamed at him for being terrible at math, or had he forgotten? But that would have been too Jason of me. As Jason sucked away on his lollipop, I looked around at all the other kids. Lupe and everyone else were chatting and laughing even though they also lost, while Bethany, Joanne, and Paula continued glaring at me from across the room. I could feel their disappointment on my back, shoulders, everywhere. I put my head down at my desk, wondering if I looked more like the other kids in my class, if I had blonde hair and blue eyes, then would it be okay that I sucked at math? Chapter 33. I pulled my hair back. I was standing in front of the mirror in the manager's quarters, the afternoon traffic a dull rumbling in my ears. I glanced over to the kitchen. There was a banana on the table. I stared at it, at its bold yellow hue. I walked over and picked it up. My eyes searched the room. It was just me in the manager's quarters. Quickly, I peeled the banana and walked over to the mirror again. I held the banana peel up, higher and higher, until it reached my head, then carefully draped the banana peel over my jet black hair. Hesitantly, I looked into the mirror. The blonde me smiled back. I stared and stared, so mesmerized by the reflection that I completely did not hear the back door opening and my mom coming in. My mother shrieked when she saw me.
"What the heck are you doing?"
she cried, pointing at the banana peel hugging my hair, the stem on top of my head. I instantly wiped the smile off my face. I yanked the banana peel off my head and threw it into the trash.
"Why?" my mother demanded. "Why would you put a banana peel on your head?"
She fished the peel out of the trash and placed it on the kitchen table. There it lay, limp and mushy, proof of my embarrassing little experiment.
"Well?"
my mom asked, her arms folded.
I was just trying something out, I said.
"What were you trying out?"
I said nothing.
"Did something happen at school today?"
she asked. I bit my lower lip. I could feel my chin quivering. My mother's face softened.
"It's okay," she said.
"You can tell me."
The tears came gushing out before the words did. I ran into my mother's arms. I told her how I got a math question wrong and the other kids mocked me, saying I should have gotten it right because I'm Chinese. When my mother heard that, she removed her arms. A new look took over her face, a look I did not like at all.
"They're right," she said.
I took a step back, shaking my head.
"No, she's not really saying that. She can't possibly be siding with them."
"She can, and she was."
"How can you get a math problem wrong? What were you thinking?"
My dad came in to see what all the commotion was about.
"What's going on?"
"Your daughter just got a math question wrong at school. That's what's going on," she informed him.
"I was always your daughter when she wasn't happy with me and my daughter when she was." I looked down at the floor. I heard my dad offer,
"It's okay."
To which my mother snapped,
"No, it's not okay."
She walked over, put her cold hands on my hot cheeks, and yelled,
"Math's all you've got!"
That did it.
"I don't even like math," I screamed back at her. "I like English!"
My mother's eyes widened.
"English?"
she exclaimed. I nodded. My heart thudded in my chest. 1 second passed, and then another. And then softly, my mother breathed out a tornado.
"You know what you are in English? You're a bicycle, and the other kids are cars."
Chapter 34. That night, I sat at the stairwell in the back, thinking of something my uncle once said. He said that if you break a bowl, you can put all the pieces back together, but it will never be the same. Water will seep through the cracks. That's what it felt like when my mom called me a bike, like our bowl shattered and we'd never be whole again. Mrs. Q spotted me sitting on the stairwell and came over and sat down next to me. She asked me what was wrong. I shook my head. I didn't know how to tell her the worry swirling in my head. One, my mom was horrible and mean. Two, she hated me. Three, what she said was true. At the thought of number three, the tears welled in my eyes again. Mrs. Q pulled me into her arms. Between sobs, she got it out of me what happened. "Oh, honey," she said, rubbing my back. "Sometimes adults say stupid things they don't mean." I rubbed my nose. "But she does mean it. She totally means it." I thought of all the times my mom had said my English was not as good as the white kids, and I cried even harder. My tears stained Mrs. Q's lovely new shirt, and Mrs. Q glanced down at the wet spot. "I'm sorry," I said. "It's okay," she said, smoothing out her shirt. "Nothing that can't be fixed with a good wash." She smiled at me. "Just like you and your mom." "No way," I said, shaking my head. I looked at Mrs. Q with utmost resolve. "The bowl is broken. There's no one breaking it."
"Easy now," Mrs. Q said. She put her hand over my hand. "I don't know about any bowls, but I do know your mom, and she loves you very much."
There was a lump in my throat. Mrs. Q raised her soft blue eyes to my wet brown ones.
"You know that, don't you?" she asked.
"Then why is she always saying such mean things?" I asked.
Mrs. Q thought about this for a while.
"I don't know," she finally said. "Your mom's been working a lot lately. She's probably tired, stressed out. Heck, maybe this isn't even about you. Maybe this is about her. Maybe people have told her her English isn't good."
I thought about that couple a while back who asked my mom to take a picture of them with their camera.
"Still doesn't make it okay what she said," I said, sniffling.
"Of course not," she said.
"It's a horrible thing to say."
"Of course it is."
"Even if the bowl's completely not broken, it's severely cracked," I told her.
Mrs. Q chuckled.
"Well, you'll just have to put some tape around it," she said.
A tiny smile escaped. I hugged Mrs. Q and thanked her. I was starting to feel a little bit better about number one and number two on my list, but not number three. Number three I carried with me into my sleep, dreaming about the essay contest and how I could possibly win if I was only a bike. That Sunday, my dad fought my mother for the chance to take me out. As usual, we loaded up the car with empty cans. We went to the recycling center. Then after that, instead of exchanging for pennies and going to the lake, my dad made an unexpected turn into a shopping center. My dad hates shopping. What was going on?
"Where are we going?" I asked him.
"You'll see," he said, getting out of the car. He pressed open the door of a stationery shop. The store was called Scribbles, and I could tell it was fancy just from the way it smelled. It smelled like expensive air freshener, the kind I always wanted to get for our front office, but couldn't because it was way too expensive. Row upon row of pencils adorned the shelves. I picked one of them up and nearly fainted when I saw the price. $5.99! I tugged on my dad's elbow.
"Let's go home," I said.
"Just a second," he said. Before I could even realize what was happening, he took one of the $5.99 pencils and told the cashier to ring it up.
"Dad, what are you doing?" I asked him.
He ignored me and handed the cashier $6, the entirety of our recycling money that day. I watched the whole thing unfold with my mouth open. Outside the shop, my dad kneeled down so that he was my level.
"You are not a bicycle," he said. My eyes searched his. "Do you understand?" he asked.
He reached down, took my small hand, and opened it. He put the new, expensive pencil in it. I gazed down at the pencil. Its shiny green sparkles glistened in the light.
I couldn't believe my eyes that something so beautiful could sit in my hands.
Dad, this is way too nice, I said, giving him a hug. I'm never even going to use it. I'm just going to look at it.
My dad laughed. Oh, I hope you use it. You're a fine story writer, he said. I shook my head.
Not in English, I said in a small voice.
In English too, he insisted. I've read your English.
I wanted to chuckle, because how would he know? If my English was 12 exclamation marks bad, his had to be at least 50. Still, his words made me feel warm and toasty, and I tucked them into my pocket.
Use this to write down everything that happens, he said. Who knows, maybe someday it'll all seem funny to you.
Maybe. I nodded and smiled, holding my brand new pencil up to the sun.
Chapter 35. When we got back to the motel, there was another Chinese immigrant waiting for us. Word was really getting out about the baseball cap. Uncle Feng was an animated guy with thick eyebrows that moved up and down as he talked. He told us that he used to be an accountant back in China and now was working as a waiter over in Riverside. That was until he got fired.
You won't believe this boss of mine, he said at dinner.
This time, my mom made lettuce. Literally, just lettuce. Thanks to Mr. Yao withholding our wages, it was all we could afford. But stir-fried with a little garlic and soy sauce, it actually wasn't half bad. What did he do?
He fired me for scratching my nose.
What? I said. Really?
That and the fact that a customer slapped me, which, by the way, was completely uncalled for.
A customer slapped you? My mom asked.
She was crazy. I honestly don't know why she slapped me, he said. All I said to her was, hey, baby.
My mom nearly choked on her tea.
Well, no wonder she slapped you, my dad said.
Uncle Feng put his chopsticks down.
What's wrong with hey, baby? Americans are always saying hey, baby. It's what you say when you greet somebody. Everybody knows that.
He shrugged.
It's what you say when you greet a girlfriend or boyfriend, my mom told him.
Uncle Feng turned bright red.
Are you serious? He asked.
My mom nodded. Uncle Feng got up and started pacing the room. He put his hands to his face.
I had no idea, he said. So many people were saying it, I just thought...
My dad chuckled. It's all right, buddy. Happens to the best of us, he said.
I cannot believe this. I was saying it to almost everyone, Uncle Feng said, scratching his nose.
Something about the way he was scratching his nose caught my eye. He was scratching with his middle finger.
Uncle Feng? I asked.
Yeah? He said.
He turned to me, his middle finger still on his nose. From a distance, it looked like he was flipping me off.
What? What is it?
He looked so innocent and earnest and at the same time so ridiculous, I just had to help him. That night, I made Uncle Feng a pamphlet of American phrases and what they actually meant. Mia's Book of American Phrases and Customs. When you hear, get out of here, do not actually get out of there. It's just something people say when they're surprised. If someone says something is a piece of cake, it doesn't mean they're going to give you cake. It just means it's easy. Do not be alarmed when you hear the phrase, riding shotgun. It doesn't mean they have a gun. It means to sit next to the driver in the car. Don't feel insulted when you hear the word dog, as in, what's up, dog? Or, how you doing, dog? Dog means friend. If someone is calling you a dog, they are not being rude and calling you a dog. If something is sweet, like sweet car, it means it is good. It does not mean it literally tastes sweet. Similarly, if something is sick, as in sick bike, it also means good. I know it's a little confusing. The word dude is a slang term for a male friend. It should not be used when addressing the police, your boss, a senior citizen, or a female. Do not stick your middle finger up for any reason in America, because the middle finger is considered offensive. Use your index finger or pinky instead to scratch your face. Don't take your shoes off everywhere. Americans like to wear their shoes inside the house. Do not comment on how someone's appearance has changed. I know it's a compliment in China to say, you look like you've gained weight,
But trust me, Americans do not like it. The pamphlet went on and on. I tried to be as detailed as possible and put in as many phrases, gestures, and idioms as I could think of. Uncle Feng was very grateful when I gave him the pamphlet. He said he would study it and memorize the rules before he applied for his next job. I also showed him my notebook with all the names of the restaurants the other immigrants had gotten fired from so he knew where to avoid working. Uncle Feng copied the restaurants down and added some names of his own. He also added some comments next to the other stories, such as, "Hang in there," and, "I feel your pain, brother." I smiled. I liked how my little notebook was becoming a message board for the immigrants. Uncle Feng left the next day as the first of many jack-o'-lanterns appeared in Mrs. Q's window. It was almost Halloween, and I hadn't really thought anything of it. But then I started making a killing in tips. I guess people felt sorry for me because every single customer who came through on Halloween put $5 in my jar. They probably thought I should be out trick-or-treating instead of working in a motel. You know who else thought I should be out trick-or-treating? The Weekleys. "It's Halloween," Mrs. Q said. "You gotta go trick-or-treating on Halloween if you're a kid. You just gotta." "I don't have a costume," I said with a shrug. "No costume, huh?" Mrs. Q asked. "Be right back." An hour later, Mrs. Q came back all wrapped up in toilet paper. So were all the other Weeklies. They were mummies. "Trick or treat," the Weeklies announced. My face brightened when I saw Hank. It had been a while since I saw a smile on his face. "Come on, Mia," Hank said, handing me a roll of toilet paper. "Let's go get you some candy." I took the toilet paper and hopped off the stool just as my parents came into the front office. "You might want to wait 10 minutes, my mom said. "Why?" I asked. "I hear our cable's down," she said with a wink. A small smile escaped from my lips, though I was still mad at my mom for calling me a bike. I thought it was very cool that she had called Lupe. Lupe, the Weeklies, and I walked up and down Meadow Lane under the moonlit sky, all of us dressed up as mummies. Lupe and I giggled under the toilet paper, going up and pressing on doorbells. As we walked, I asked Lupe whether there was Halloween in Mexico. Lupe said there was something similar called Day of the Dead, when people would pay their respects to deceased loved ones by visiting cemeteries and building altars called ofrendas. At the mention of deceased loved ones, Lupe got really quiet. I guess she was thinking about her grandmother. "Are you going to go back and visit your grandmother?" I asked her. "Mexico was so close, just a few hours away by car." Lupe shook her head. "I don't know," she said. She didn't seem to want to talk about it. "What about you?" Mrs. T asked me. "You guys have Halloween in China?" I laughed. "No way," I said. I told Lupe and the Weeklies about our first Halloween in America, how we didn't know what it was and were so freaked out by strangers coming up to our door dressed as goblins and witches that we turned all the lights out and hid behind our sofa. Lupe laughed so hard, bits of Reese's peanut butter cup came flying out of her mouth. I smiled. In total that evening, we got 18 candy bars, 5 Reese's peanut butter cups, 27 Tootsie Rolls, 5 packets of Skittles, and 6 lemon heads. Hank said we did well. He explained that when it came to candy, there were multiple tiers. At the top tier, you have your full-sized candy bars, followed by your mints, junior mints, peppermint patties, etc., and all the way down at the bottom tier, lollipops and that sort of thing. "You know what you guys are?" I asked the Weeklies and Lupe. "What?" "Top tier friends," I said. Hand in hand, we walked back to the motel. Chapter 36. The next Sunday, it was my mom's turn to take me out. I looked down at the shopping bags in her hand. My mom's favorite thing to do besides math was go shopping. Well, not shopping exactly. We walked around the mall with empty shopping bags filled with toilet paper. We'd found the empty shopping bags in the mall parking lot a while back. There was a bright red one from Macy's and one from Mervyn's and a shimmery silvery one from the store called Charlotte Russe. My mother was so happy when we found them. She immediately went into the mall bathroom and stuffed them with toilet paper. Now, every time we went to the mall, we carried them. My mom says that people are nicer to you if you walk around with a shopping bag.
As usual, we poked around Macy's. A sales lady came up to us and asked if we needed any help. My mom said her line, "I'm just looking." Usually, just being around new clothes cheered her up. Today, though, she seemed extra sad.
"I don't know what we're going to do," she said. "The extra $20 a day for Hank is killing us, just killing us."
She shook her head.
"Maybe I could take a part-time job," she said. "I could see if any of the restaurants..."
"A part-time job? But what about Dad?" I protested. Dad had enough trouble as it was, even with her help. He got so little sleep from being up all night checking customers in. Some days, he didn't even eat dinner after he finished cleaning. He just crashed onto the bed in the living room.
"Well, I have to do something," my mother said.
Once again, I thought about my tips. I had about $100 now. I was hiding it under my bed in a Ziploc bag. My mother poked me.
"Hey, isn't that..."
she asked, pointing. I looked up and saw Jason standing there with someone who must have been his mom. They looked exactly alike, seeming just as surprised to see us there. Jason and his mother waved and walked over to us. It was hard not to stare at Jason's mom, specifically the humongous diamond on her hand. I thought I might go blind.
"It's so good to finally meet you," Jason's mother said, extending a hand to my mother. "My husband's told me so much about you."
She glanced at my mother's shopping bags and arched an eyebrow.
"I didn't know you guys shopped here," she said.
My mother's face turned the same color as her shopping bag. "We're just looking," she muttered. While she and my mother talked, Jason turned to me.
"Are you buying new pants?"
he hissed.
"Are you buying a new face?"
I hissed back. Jason tugged on his mom's arm.
"Let's go," he said.
"We ought to get going," Mrs. Yao said.
"We should get back too," my mom said.
"It was so nice meeting you,"
Mrs. Yao said, fake smiling at my mom.
"We should get together sometime."
"Well, you have my number," my mom joked. Mrs. Yao laughed. As we walked out of the store, I turned around and stuck my tongue out at Jason, who stuck his tongue out right back. Once we were in our car, my mom started having a panic attack.
"Oh, God, I knew we shouldn't have come. I had this feeling all day that something bad was going to happen, but I just ignored it,"
my mom cried, rocking herself back and forth in the driver's seat. "Is this about bumping into Jason and his mom?" I asked her. She stared at me with this manic look in her eyes.
"We didn't just bump into them. We bumped into them at Macy's,"
she cried.
"So? So don't you understand? People like us don't go to Macy's, especially if we're paying $20 a day for Hank. They're probably thinking we must have savings, and now they're going to try to squeeze us for even more money. Oh, God! Oh, God!"
My mother opened her door and got out, gasping for air. I scrambled after her.
"This was all my fault," she said, shaking her head as she opened up the trunk. "I should have never kept those bags."
Before I could stop her, she took them out and ripped them into shreds right there in the parking lot. We both stared at the tiny pieces of butchered paper. I thought about the day my mom found those bags, how she ran her hands over them and couldn't stop smiling all day. How sometimes in the late afternoons, after she'd spent the entire day on her knees, scrubbing floor after floor after floor, she'd get the shopping bags out and just look at them. She didn't think I saw her, but I did. Things must be really bad for my mom to want to give all that up. Once again, I thought about the $100 hiding under my mattress. The guilt burned in my chest. Chapter 37. I told Lupe the next day about bumping into Jason's mom at the mall.
"So what'd you do?"
she asked.
"Nothing. We just left," I said.
She looked surprised.
"You think we'd hang out with her?" I asked.
"I don't know," she shrugged.
"Maybe you guys went shopping together. Aren't you guys always trying to find a good deal?"
I hated it when she lumped me and Jason together. "It's not guys, it's guy, singular," I told her. "I like a good deal, sure, but I don't screw people over." Lupe looked at the ground and didn't say anything. I started to feel bad, but I didn't apologize. I needed her to know Jason and I were not the same. In class, we had wrapped up our China unit, thank God, and moved on to other countries in Asia. Who can tell me another place where a lot of things are manufactured besides Asia? Mrs. Douglas asked. A hand shot up. Canada? Someone from the front row asked. Mexico, Mrs. Douglas announced, ending the guessing pretty quickly. I glanced over at Lupe, who looked like she wanted to crawl under her desk. Many of the factories there are called maquiladoras, and they make things for cheap, Mrs. Douglas explained. How cheap? Another kid asked. Very cheap, Mrs. Douglas said. She told us that, at some maquiladoras, workers made as little as 50 cents an hour. This struck me as hugely unfair, and I immediately raised my hand. How can they pay their workers so little? I asked Mrs. Douglas. It's supply and demand. Anytime a lot of people want a job, and there aren't that many jobs, the salary goes down, Mrs. Douglas said. I thought about Mr. Yao's comment when we first came, about how 10,000 other immigrants would take our job in 2 seconds if we quit. Okay, kids, Mrs. Douglas announced. We're going to play a little game. It's called Hot Seat. That got my classmates' attention. They all sat up straighter in their seats, only to slump back down seconds later when they realized Hot Seat was an educational game, not a game game. Here's the way Hot Seat worked. Mrs. Douglas picked someone at random to represent the maquiladoras. That person had 10 minutes to prepare his or her opening statement. Then they had to sit in the hot seat and answer tough questions from the floor. The rest of the class was the floor. The harder the question, the better, Mrs. Douglas said. With that, she reached into her hat of names and pulled out a piece of paper. Jason Yao, she announced. Jason groaned. Slowly, he pulled out his pencil and started writing out his statement while I sat next to him, jaw locked, eyebrows furrowed. He was going down. Good morning. My name is Jason Yao, and I represent the Maquiladoras of Mexit. My hand shot up in the air. Hey, Jason protested. I'm not even done reading my statement yet. Fine, I said. I put my hand down and waited with bated breath for him to finish. Jason droned on about how big his factories were and how many t-shirts and umbrella stands they made every year. As soon as he finished, my hand shot back up. How does it feel to squeeze your workers for every last cent they have? I asked. I don't squeeze anyone, Jason said. You pay your workers 50 cents an hour. I'd call that squeezing, I said. I glanced at Mrs. Douglas, who gave me the thumbs-up sign to keep going. They don't have to work for me. Nobody's forcing them to, Jason said with a shrug. But they don't have a choice. They have to feed their family, I said. Well, that's their problem, Jason said. My classmates' heads bounced from Jason to me like it was a tennis match. What if you were in their position? I asked Jason. If I were in their position, I'd appreciate having a job, he said. He looked hard at me. Wouldn't you? My cheeks burned. I glanced over at Lupe. As usual, her mouth was clamped shut. I turned back to Jason. You need them just as much as they need you, I said. Without them, you wouldn't have a factory. Yeah, so? So why don't you pay them more? I yelled. Why do you always have to take from them? Take, 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 take! Every time I said take, I lunged forward in my seat. The other kids joined in, and soon everyone was chanting, take, 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 take! It's not my fault, Jason shrieked. It's supply and demand. Mrs. Douglas, help! Mrs. Douglas stepped in and took over, freeing Jason from the hot seat. As Jason crawled back to his desk, Mrs. Douglas turned to me and said, Boy, that was really something. Well done, Mia. I had no idea you were so passionate about maquiladoras. I didn't either. I caught up to Lupe after school. Hey, how come you didn't help me back there? I asked her. Lupe shrugged. Didn't look like you needed my help, she said. She turned and started walking home. I felt the sting of rejection. What was up with her? I wondered if it had anything to do with what I said earlier when I chewed her out for lumping me and Jason in the same category. Had I gone too far? I kicked the rocks on the side of the road and decided to take the long way home. About halfway back, I wandered into a shopping plaza where there was a Pizza Hut calling to me at the end of the buildings. I stopped and peered in. Usually, just looking into a restaurant filled me up. All those smiley people, family sitting down for a delicious meal together. We didn't get to eat out much in China because family meals were usually at my grandmother's house, but the few times we did go out, it was pretty funny. In China, people do not split the bill. It's considered very rude to do so or to not pay for a friend. As a result, people routinely got into fistfights in restaurants as customers pushed and shoved one another for the bill. As a kid, I remember it being hilarious to sit there and watch grown people fighting. Sometimes the fighting got so bad, the waiters and waitresses would have to squeeze in and break it up. Sometimes it would take a whole pack of waitresses just to pin down one person. There was absolutely none of that going on at Pizza Hut that day. Everybody was very civil. There was no shouting and no fighting. People were splitting the bill right down the middle. I guess that's because in America, it's to each his own. Maybe that was why Lupe didn't stand up for me. Maybe it had nothing to do with what I said about me and Jason. Chapter 38. Jason glared at me the next day. I could feel his anger vibrating off of him. I put my head down on my desk to avoid having to look at him, but when I looked up again, I noticed he was twirling a pencil. He was always doing this, but then I noticed it wasn't just any ordinary pencil this time. It was my pencil, the one my dad got me. "Hey, give me that," I said, nearly jumping out of my chair. But Jason quickly held the sparkly green pencil beyond my reach. I waved my hand frantically so that Mrs. Douglas could see what an emergency this was.
"Yes, Mia?" Mrs. Douglas said.
"Jason stole my pencil," I said, narrowing my eyes at him. The words shot out of my mouth, sizzling hot. Mrs. Douglas turned to Jason.
"Is that true?"
Jason, expert faker that he was, feigned shock and outrage. "Of course not. Mrs. Douglas, this is my pencil. I would never take anything from Mia." "Liar!" I exclaimed. "That's enough, Mia," Mrs. Douglas said. "Both of you, up here now." She motioned with her finger for the two of us to come up to her desk. I stared at my sparkly pencil in Jason's hand, which he clutched tightly with his sticky, sweaty fingers as we walked over to Mrs. Douglas.
"Is this about what happened at Hot Seat?" Mrs. Douglas asked.
"No," Jason blurted at the same time I said. "Of course it is."
"He's mad I won," I told Mrs. Douglas. "So he had to take the one thing. The one thing."
Tears slammed into the back of my eyes as I tried to get the words out.
"You didn't win. There is no winning in Hot Seat. There's only sitting," Jason said.
"Give me the pencil," Mrs. Douglas said. Jason handed it to her. I watched as she turned it 360 degrees.
I don't see any name on it," Mrs. Douglas said.
"That's because it costs $5.99," I told her. "That wasn't a pencil. That was practically jewelry. You can't just write your name on a piece of jewelry."
"Exactly, which is why it has to be mine," Jason pointed at me. "You really think she can afford something this nice?"
My jaw dropped. What a thing to say.
"I'm afraid without a name on it, we can't tell for sure whose it is," Mrs. Douglas said.
I sucked in my breath, preparing for the worst. Mrs. Douglas was going to keep the pencil for herself. I should have known. She'd probably had her eye on it for days.
"There's only one thing to do," Mrs. Douglas said. "Break the pencil in half." I gasped. How could she suggest such a thing?
But before I could say anything, Jason shouted,
"No, don't break the pencil in half.
Oh, let her have it." Mrs. Douglas smiled.
"Now we know who the true owner of the pencil is," she said.
I held out a trembling hand.
"Jason,"
she decided. Mrs. Douglas said that because I took so long responding to the proposal of breaking the pencil in half, I could not possibly be the rightful owner. And Jason, with his touching, heartfelt plea on behalf of the pencil, must be the rightful owner. So the pencil was his. It was the stupidest, most unfair thing I'd ever heard, and I had to bite the inside of my cheeks to keep from crying. On the way back to our desks, I turned to Jason and asked in a very small voice, "Please, Jason, can you give me my pencil back? It's very important to me." He thought for a second. "It's important to you, huh?" he asked. I nodded. Jason held my pencil up as if to give it to me, and I reached my hand out to take it. Then he whipped the pencil back, stuck out his tongue, and licked it. He licked my beautiful, sparkly pencil up and down with his nasty, evil tongue. I was so startled, I made a noise that came out as a half snort and half chirp, which only made him laugh. He stuck the pencil in his pocket right as the bell rang. School was over, and Jason walked off with the nicest thing I had. Chapter 39. Dear Jason, please give me back my pencil for the following reasons. 1. It's mine. 2. You have so many pencils, including 2 really cool bendable ones you don't even use. 3. That pencil cost a lot of money, and I know you saw us at Macy's, but we were just looking. We do not have savings. 4. That pencil is really important to me. You have no idea how much it means to me. Sincerely, Mia. I crossed out number 4 because I knew he wouldn't care. If anything, it would only make him want to keep the pencil even more, just to irritate me. Wasn't that what this was all about? The phone started ringing, and I put my pencil down. It was Mr. Yao. I frowned. Now what?
"Tell your parents I'm going to be gone this weekend," he said.
I half listened as he explained how he was taking his family to Las Vegas. I was in no mood to listen to his vacation plans. "What are you telling me this for?" I said into the phone.
"I'm telling you because you guys keep having all those issues with the cable," he said. "If you have any while I'm gone, I left Jose's number with my housekeeper."
I sat up in my stool. "So you're not going to be at your house this weekend?"
"That's right."
"None of you? Not even Jason?"
"Right."
It occurred to me that there could be an opportunity here. Lupe was less than enthused when I told her my plan.
"I don't know," she said. "What do you mean? All we have to do is go over to his house after school and tell the housekeeper that we're from the Girl Scouts and we're here to sell cookies. Then we'll ask her if we can use the bathroom, and when you're using the bathroom, I'll sneak into Jason's room and get my pencil back."
I had been over the plan with her 3 times already. It was perfect. Lupe looked away.
"I don't want to get in trouble," she said.
"You're not going to get in trouble," I said. "They're out of town. It'll just be their housekeeper if there's anyone even there. The whole thing's only going to take 5 minutes.
Lupe shook her head. I crossed my arms. I was beginning to get really tired of this.
"You know, you always do this," I said to her.
"Do what?"
"Chicken out."
"What do you mean?"
she asked. The fact that she didn't even know what I was talking about was even more infuriating.
"You never stand up for me," I said to her. "I thought you were my friend."
"You don't get it, do you?"
"Get what?"
"Nothing. Forget it." There was no mistaking it, the anger in her eyes.
"What are you talking about?" I asked her.
"I'm talking about you. You're going to Vermont. You can say all this crazy stuff to Jason because he likes you," she exclaimed. "What about me?"
I blinked in confusion. "I can't go with you to Mr. Yao's house," she said. "My dad still needs Mr. Yao."
Lupe squeezed her eyes shut.
"Unlike you, we don't have another plan."
Chapter 40. The storm in Lupe's face stuck with me after she left. I felt sick with regret, making her feel this way. After all she'd done for me. Lupe was my best friend. She was the one who told me about the roller coaster in the first place. If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't even know about it. And there I was, going on and on about my plan to get off of it,
without even thinking about her. It should be her entering the contest, not me. Let's face it, she had a much better chance at winning anyway. I decided to write her a letter. Dear Lupe, I'm sorry I said all those things. I completely understand if you don't want to go to Mr. Yao's house with me. Actually, I've been thinking about it, and I don't think I'm going to go either. You're right. It's too risky. We have to be careful. I might have a plan, but for now, we still work for him. And as you say, we still need him. About the plan, I've been thinking, why don't you enter the essay contest? I can tell you what to write about. You probably have a better shot at winning it. Your grammar's a lot better than mine. If you win, maybe we can run it together. What do you think? Your friend, Mia. The next school day, I went very early to school to put the letter on Lupe's desk. I also had something special for Jason, but it wasn't the letter I wrote him. It was something else I had picked up recently from another Chinese immigrant. When I was helping this uncle with his luggage, I had pulled too hard and got a blister on my hand. The man said he had just the thing and gave me a little vial of Chinese medicine. It felt minty and cool on my finger, but when I reached up to tuck my bangs behind my ear, my minty finger got a little too close to my eye. I was crying in seconds. So after I set Lupe's letter down on her desk, I practically soaked Jason's pencils with the same stuff that had made me cry. Let's see him twirl these suckers now. Jason did not notice the gleam on his pencils when he sat down later that morning. He was too busy bragging about Las Vegas and all the great food he ate and the luxurious suite they stayed in.
They had a pool with 3 pool slides. There was even a restaurant right smack in the...
When are you going to give me my pencil back? I asked. I wanted to cut to the chase. I couldn't care less about his fancy pools, considering I stared at one all day.
You mean my pencil? He shrugged. I gave it to my dog, Wealthy. It's probably all chewed up by now.
He would give it to his dog, and he would have a dog named Wealthy. Jason smirked, picked up one of his pencils, and started twirling. He twirled it a little too close to his face, and just as I predicted, the strong, minty smell made his eyes water. He put the pencil down and began rubbing his eyes furiously with his menthol fingers. Big mistake.
Oh my God, Jason's crying, one of my classmates exclaimed. No, I'm not, Jason insisted, blinking furiously.
But it was too late. Everyone ran over and huddled next to Jason. It wasn't every day a kid in 5th grade started bawling. 4th grade maybe, but not 5th grade. We watched with wide eyes as Jason cried and cried. Sunlight flooded in through the tall glass windows, and Jason's tears glistened in the warm peach glow. I couldn't stop smiling the whole time. It was a beautiful, beautiful day. Chapter 41. The only thing that could make that day more beautiful was the chance of Lupe forgiving me. I watched as she read my letter, and a smile bloomed across her face.
So you'll do it? You'll enter the essay contest? I asked her.
Lupe chuckled.
Oh, no. If you want to win a motel, you're going to have to win it yourself, she said. But I will help you with your grammar.
I threw my arms around her.
And I'm sorry about what I said about you and Jason. You guys are not the same at all, Lupe said into my hair.
I skipped all the way home that day, riding the wave of hope and promise, a glorious wave so strong and powerful, I thought it would never end. But then I turned onto Coast Boulevard. Everything came crashing down. My mother was lying by the side of the road. Blood, a thick, gooey red, gushed down the side of her face.
Mom!
I screamed. With her shivering hands, she touched her stomach, then stared at her fingertips, blinking in disbelief as she registered the color. Shaking, she told me what happened. While I was at school, some people came and tried to break into the front office. They were after the cash register. My mom heard them and rushed downstairs. The first kick to Mom's stomach landed with a thud. She had screamed in pain and fallen to the ground. My father was in the laundry room and couldn't hear her over the roar of the washing machine, but Hank heard the scream. He came running out of his room just as the second kick landed to my mother's head.
Oh, Mom!
I hugged her and cried. Her lips were cut open, and she could barely talk.
They took off running when they saw Hank, she cried. But Hank ran after them. I'd never seen him so angry. He's still out there.
Suddenly, I heard my dad's voice.
Mia!
My father called. I looked over at him. He was standing by the laundry room, carrying an armful of towels. When he saw my mother on the ground, the towels fell from his hands. He ran toward us. The pain that whipped across his face when he got up close and saw my mom was indescribable. He collapsed on the ground next to her, his voice shaking as he told her it was going to be okay. Carefully, I helped my mom up from the curb and brought her into the manager's quarters. We got her into bed, where I put an ice pack on her head and a hot water bottle over her tummy. The wound had turned deep purple. Whenever I lifted the blanket to look, my mom grimaced. My dad paced the living room.
It should have been me, not you, he said. It should have been me.
I'm fine, my mom insisted, trying to sit up straighter, only to collapse back down because it was too painful.
We have to take her to a hospital, I said to my dad.
No, my mom said, coughing. We don't have any insurance. Going to the hospital will kill us.
My dad plunged his head into his hands. I realized he was crying.
How did we get here?
He muttered over and over again.
How did we get here?
I walked over to my room and retrieved my Ziploc bag of tips. I have some money, I said. My parents were so busy crying and coughing, they didn't even hear me.
You guys, I have some money, I yelled.
My father drove as quickly as he could.
Hang on, he said. We're almost there.
I sat in the back, clutching my Ziploc bag full of money with one hand and holding my mother with the other. The doctor in the ER saw my mom right away. He was a white guy and seemed really concerned. He asked my mom whether she was dizzy. She said no. He asked my mom whether she remembered blacking out when she hit the ground. She said maybe she wasn't sure. He asked her to describe the pain on a scale of 1 to 10. I thought for sure she would say 10 or even 11 from the way she kept grinding her teeth and wincing every time she moved, but she insisted it was more like a 7. They took her in for an x-ray. My dad and I waited outside because they said it wasn't good for kids to be in the x-ray room. When at last the doctor reappeared, he had good news. None of Mom's bones were broken. She had a mild concussion, and the doctor gave her painkillers and bandages for the bleeding, which thankfully was just on the outside, not the inside.
Make sure she takes it easy the next few days, he said. Use an ice pack for 10 to 20 minutes at a time. Gradually, the swelling will go down, and so will the bruising. No work, no gym.
My dad laughed out loud when he said gym. I guess the idea of my mom, or any of us, going to the gym was pretty funny. My dad promised she wouldn't and thanked the doc. His smile faded when the doctor gave him the bill. I peeked around his arm and read the paper too. The total came out to $5,800. My dad gripped the counter to keep from falling. I thought he was going to have a concussion. Frantically, he explained to the nurses in his broken English that we didn't have any insurance.
No insurance? The nurses asked exasperatedly. How could you have no insurance?
The nurses stared long and hard at us, these alien, insuranceless creatures. They told us to wait while they got their supervisor. 10 minutes later, the supervisor appeared. He was another white guy, stern-looking, about 40 years old. As we explained our insuranceless situation to him, he looked like he had about as much empathy as a Lego. He asked us to fill out a bunch of special forms for low-income people.
We'll only waive the hospital bills if you make less than the federal poverty income guideline for a family of three, he said.
We started filling out the forms. Since my parents made about $750 a month, that came out to $9,000 a year. The poverty line for a family our size was $11,890, so we were well below the poverty line, but the form also asked us how much we paid in rent. We put down $0 because technically we got free board living in the manager's quarters. The supervisor looked at that and started shaking his head.
Free rent? I'm sorry, but I don't think you qualify, he said. What do you mean? My mom asked.
You can't get free rent and free health care, he said.